sanitation. We welcome you and the officials from your department. And thank you for making time to be with us today as we get the report from the SIU. We also want to acknowledge National Treasury officials who are here. I'm not sure if we have anyone from the Auditor General's office. My sincerest apologies. It's late in the day and my vision sometimes becomes a bit blurred. My apologies. Welcome, 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 welcome. Advocate Mutim, we welcome you and thank you for making time together with your team. It's unfortunate we could not meet last week because of understandable commitments, which then shifted our program a bit, but I think today we're able to manage it, so not much harm has been done. Comrades, welcome back. Welcome back to those who were with in the morning, and even those who left us on our own in the morning, we welcome you this evening. We welcome you this evening, and we're happy to be here. As we agreed, I'm sure Mr. Ben would have given you a copy of the not today's program, but our program of hearings with water and sanitation, but which starts today with a report, with an update from the SIU. And I'm sure each one of you would have seen the allocations and this and that. I don't see Comrade Kekane. Yeah. So having said that, I think today, very much unlike the usual for us, will be to listen. For once, we'll listen and hear what the SIU have to present to us. And once you are done, Advocate, if there are any issues, we'll allow comrades to. But if it's like last time, they'll just sleep and we'll all go home and have an early evening. So I'll hand over to you to talk to us.
Well, thank you, Honorable Chairperson of SCOPA, Honorable Members of SCOPA, the Minister, Minister Nkwinti, my colleagues from SIU and the colleagues from the Department, from AG, members of the media who are present. We appreciate the opportunity to come and brief the committee on the investigations that we are conducting within the Department of Water Affairs. Chairperson, we will cover the legislative mandate. Really, we have included there for info. We have run through it various times. We'll go through the proclamations that we are looking at, past and current investigations. We'll take the committee through the general findings. Then the new proclamation that we have obtained, and then the systemic recommendations that we have made to date. The empowering legislation, I think we can go past. We would like to just indicate to the committee that the evidence or the presentation today will indicate some of the civil litigations that we have instituted to date. We'll also cover some of the evidence of the criminality referred to the National Prosecuting Authority. evidence of misconduct that would have been referred to the department, and if there are other referrals to other regulatory authorities such as SARS, will indicate that, and will also indicate the date on which the reports have been presented to the president. But it's important to note, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that in the process of our investigations, we do not wait until the report to the President is issued before we then do all these outcomes, simply because we are of the view that the sooner the action is taken, when evidence presents itself, the better. We have also indicated that we have observed a phenomenon where officials resign in the face of disciplinary processes, and we have more often observed that they get rehired within government. And we have looked through the public service regulations and act. We've come across a provision which says such officials can still be pursued wherever they are within government. Right, the next slide really just deals with the skills that we employ in doing our investigations. I'll go straight, Honourable Chair, to the proclamations. We've previously presented to SCOPA and the Portfolio Committee on Water and Sanitation. This was done on the 27th of March 2018. So this presentation will focus on the progress made since the previous presentation. The proclamations that we present or focus at today are the proclamation number 35 of 2008. This refers to the allegations that were received relating to Mhlathuze Water Board. The next proclamation is proclamation R54 of 2012. That covers various allegations at the Department of Water Affairs. The other one is Proclamation R22 of 2016. This focuses on the awarding of contracts to LTE Consulting by the Lepelle Northern Water and Gauteng Department of Human Settlement. The other proclamation, which is in the latest proclamation, is R27 of 2018. That focuses on the awarding of contract by Department of Water Affairs to SEP. The next slide focuses on the general outcomes on all four proclamations. This is a really brief overview. On the civil litigation instituted by SIU to date, on the Vuani investigation, we've instituted civil litigation to the value of 95 million. We will cover that as we present. In the proclamation focusing on at the Gauteng Department of Human Settlement, we've instituted civil litigation to the value of 108 million. In the Lepelle Northern Water, we have instituted civil litigation to the value of 2.2 billion. And Chairperson, I need to pause here that this is still almost hot off the press. I've been presented by my team with the papers that indicate that they have been served yesterday, the 26th of November, 2018. This is a notice of motion against LTE Consulting, Qatar Civils, South Zambezi Engineering, Lepelle Northern Water. Not so fast.
Can you repeat those companies again, slowly?
This is in the matter between Special Investigating Unit and the following parties. LTE Consulting, the first respondent. Qatar Civils, second respondent. South Zambezi Engineering Services, the third respondent. Lepelle Northern Water, the fourth respondent, Mopani District Municipality, the fifth respondent, and the Department of Water and Sanitation is the sixth respondent. Chairperson, we'll go through some of the high-level details in this matter, but the value of this litigation is 2.2 billion. With regards to the evidence pointing to criminality, we have to date referred about 36 matters to the National Prosecuting Authority. That's slide number 9, Chairperson. We've also referred about 7 matters to Asset Forfeiture Unit. With regard to evidence of misconduct referred to the accounting officer, we've referred about 23 disciplinary matters. 3 officials have been dismissed, we've been informed. 1 received final written warning and 4 officials resigned. Evidence that have been referred to the South African Revenue Service, this refers to some of the tax or income tax issues or VAT issues on the part of the service providers. We've referred about 20 matters. We've referred 3 matters to CIDB. And with regard to the presidential report, and this is the point I was making earlier on, that as we submit this report, we do point out that we have already made these referrals and actions should be taken and should have been taken at the time. Under Proclamation 35 of 2008, we submitted the report on the 30th of April 2013, then at the time. Under Proclamation R54 of 2012, final report was submitted on the 15th of December 2016. A supplementary report relating to Vuani investigation was submitted on the 28th of October 2018. Final report on the Gauteng Department of Human Settlement was submitted on the 21st of September 2018. With regard to Lepelle Northern Water, we have submitted an interim report. And by interim report, I think we did explain the last time we were here, but by interim report, it's really a report that indicates what scope to date has been covered, and the matters that are dealt with in the interim report are final. So we've submitted this report on the 31st of October 2018. The investigation is still ongoing in this matter. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, with regard to Proclamation R54 of 2012, Department of Water Affairs, this was published on the 21st of September 2012. SIU conducted the investigation into approximately 34 allegations, all of which were completed with significant and successful outcomes. The presidential report on the outcomes was presented to the President on the 15th of December 2016. Prior to the finalization of the presidential report, new allegations were received by the SIU relating to the procurement process of the Vuani steel pipeline, which the SIU commenced investigating in late 2014 under the same proclamation, and hence there was that supplementary report. SIU presented the final presidential report on this matter on the 28th of October 2018. The SIU observations of the current state of service delivery, we've observed that there is no water going through the pipeline and the communities are still not getting the benefit of what services were really contracted for. Our observation is that the 3-kilometer part of the pipeline that was damaged has not been repaired. There are parts of the lining inside the pipe that are loose and they really need urgent reparation. This confirmed by the project managers, Big in Africa, who are the project managers who were on site. We've observed and determined that the department doesn't have funds to pay Askul or Big in. The situation may have changed, but this was at the time when we did the findings out. We've observed the following project management issues. Investigations revealed serious maladministration and malpractices as follows. The department's supervising engineer, in the process, duly alerted the department timely to the risks involved, and our view is that it would be very difficult to hold them accountable for the officials' refusal to heed to their advice. The officials' consent, for example, cited the promotion of BEE as a justification to irregularly split the tender and thereupon extend the contractor's contract despite Biggin's advice to the contrary. The official consent is in the process of being disciplined, we are informed. Failure to comply with public service management and its regulations with regard to supply chain management. We need to add also that there was failure to heed professional engineering advice. We've observed that there was poor project management oversight by the department, poor financial management, and we've also observed that there was poor record keeping, records which could not be accessed or found easily during the investigation. The next slide, slide number 13, we've indicated, Chairperson, on the right-hand side, which is the status since the last presentation. But we mention there that as a result of the investigation conducted by the SIU, we've referred matters in respect of the outcomes of the investigations, which are detailed in the next presentation. We have, with regard to all these matters, particularly relating to disciplinary matters, we have written to the Director General of the Department, and the purpose of writing to the Director General is informed by the SIU new strategy, which enjoins us to follow up on the matters that we have referred to state institutions. We will come later on with some of the updates with regard to some of those matters. We've also followed up with the National Prosecuting Authority to obtain the status of all the matters referred. SIU has also provided a schedule with the details of all matters referred to the relevant authorities, that is CIDB, in order to facilitate feedback. We did mention on the right-hand side bottom that the final presentation on Vuan was presented. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, this slide may just look familiar because we had a similar slide in the last presentation, but the last column on the extreme right indicates the status of all of those matters that we have referred. In the last presentation, we did indicate that we would be following up on all the matters that we have referred, and we have since followed up with the National Prosecuting Authority. We've followed up with the accounting officer and other regulatory authorities that need to be engaged. Chairperson, on the first matter there, which is accommodation services by Bozi Trading, you'd see on the extreme right that NPA is still to provide us with feedback following on our engagement. The same feedback we received on the second matter relating to contract workers 3, Ndimeni training and development. On the third matter, the status is that now the NPA has moved and they have referred that matter to Special Criminal Prosecution Unit within the NPA. So we are expecting that on the next occasion, the SCCU would then indicate to us how far they have moved in ensuring prosecution of that matter. On the last matter on that slide, Booker management and projects, we're still awaiting feedback. On the next matter, which is the appointment of 86 contract workers, Again, the matter is with the MPA for decision. The next line, the next matter, we were delighted now to get feedback on the payments made to TWM projects. We were delighted to get feedback that the prosecutor appointed will proceed with the prosecution. So, Honorable Chair and members, there is feedback in some of the matters. On the Sunday River Valley, we have reported before that as a result of the SIU intervention, the municipality paid about 5.8 million. The matter Night Breeze, Northunder Trading, we're still waiting for the feedback. On the next matter, Chief Morris Business Enterprises, we are delighted to report that NPA has indicated that the evidence is sufficient and they will proceed with the prosecution. The next two matters, we're still waiting for update from the NPA. Honorable Chair, we move forward now to the general procurement findings that we have made. The procurement of goods and services by the Department of Water and Sanitation, which were not fair, transparent, or equitable, and conflict of interest of the departmental personnel in entities contracting with the department. In respect of the above, the SIU has found evidence during the course of the investigation that indicated fruitless and wasteful expenditure, irregular expenditure, fraud and theft. We've also found evidence indicating to corruption, officials who appear to have defrauded the department by being complicit in the manipulation of procurement processes consent to their personal benefit. We've also found contravention of the Prevention of Combating of Corrupt Activities Act as it relates to the corruption investigation. We've also found that there were contravention of the public service regulations. We found evidence relating to dishonesty and fraud, the contravention of Code of Good Conduct as issued by the public service. We've also found that public service C4.5, by engaging in any transaction or action that is in conflict with the or infringes on the execution of the official duties. The next finding, it's pretty much similar, but there's a specific reference to the public service code of conduct, which is C53, which is also using official position to obtain private gifts or benefits for himself or herself during the performance of their duties. They're almost similar, but the other one is really execution of official duties, and the other one is extraction of gifts. Honorable Chair, we'll move on to the matters of discipline. Disciplinary referrals and outcomes. This is where we have approached the department through the accounting officer in terms of what is the status of the referrals that we have made. There's one matter, number one, which we have really not named the employee simply because the matter has been closed, we are told, due to insufficient evidence. Chairperson, I think we need to just mention here that there's similar matters where we were informed that the matters were closed due to insufficient evidence and representations by officials. We have gone back to the department seeking to understand further the circumstances under which those matters were closed. The next matter, we've been informed that the official was dismissed, Maurice Mbasima Nguna. If I page through, there's the next matter, Nancy Sempete Mudibe. The next column just indicates the business entities which they were involved in, Chair, Honorable Chair. We're informed that the employee resigned from the department the 31st of December 2014 before the finalization of the disciplinary process. Number five, Simpiwe Hombisa Kinwa. the official resigned from the department on 30 April 2016. Smangaliso Margaret Malaza, the official, was dismissed from the department on the 27th of September 2017. The next matter, we were informed that it's one of those matters where it's been referred to another province or another regional office. The next matter relating to an official, Mahlodi Caroline Ramanyeme, the official resigned. The next matter, number 9, it's one of those matters where it's been closed for no sufficient evidence, and after consideration of representation, we will follow up with the department in this regard. The next matter is N.I. Kuluse, the official resigned from the department 12 October 2016. The next matter, which relates to the appointment of 86 contract workers, the matter still to be investigated. Ms. Joy Litzau was dismissed from the department on the 31st July 2017. The next matter, which relates to the payments to TWM project, matter to be further investigated. Matter relating to Ms. Rosina Korong-Tefu, matter finalized, however the official was given final written warning. The next matter is one of those matters where we'll follow up, where matter was closed due to insufficient evidence. The next slide, really just a rehash of what I've said. We've written to the Acting Director General requesting reasons for the delay in the implementation of the SIU recommendations to discipline the officials, which in some instances were in excess of 4 years. A concern has also been raised as to the disciplinary matters that have been closed, where there were representations by the officials and without consulting the SIU regarding evidence to rebut the representations. We've also written to the Director General of Department of Public Service and Administration to inquire whether the officials that have resigned have taken up employment in another government department or state entity. We found that the Public Service Act in Section 16B indicates that the accounting authority may refer disciplinary evidence to the official's new accounting authority to take action against the official. So we will facilitate and monitor the execution of this provision. Honorable Chairperson and honorable members, we move forward now to the current investigations. The status of the Vuani investigation, this was the investigation after receiving the allegations way into the investigation. We've completed this investigation. The evidence has revealed that the contract was awarded in 2012 with a value of 50 million, with a construction completion period of 45 weeks. We found that a total of 29 million has been paid to a company called Askul to date. Subsequent to the award of the contract, Askul Construction, as from 6 July 2012 onwards, our evidence revealed that this company failed to perform on time. Instead of enforcing the penalty, the department allegedly unlawfully entered into a supplementary agreement which made the provision for the waiving of the penalties. Instead of invoking the penalties, there was then this supplementary agreement which was entered into. The agreement also provided for a 16 million advance payment to Askul Construction with a view to improve its cash flow. The extension is allegedly to constitute a complete disregard and or contravention of the provisions of the original contract and the Public Finance Management Act. On the status of the Vuani investigation, on the 9th February 2016, we advised the Director General of the Department not to proceed with the payment of 8.5 million to Askul Construction on the basis of what we have found. The Director General accepted the SIU recommendation and instructed the two officials not to approve the amount indicated as payment to Aspol Construction, thereby saving the department that amount. The SIU further advised the department that the 13 million paid to Aspol Construction under the premises of being an advance payment was irregular, as well as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Under the Fuwani project, we have referred 3 matters to SARS, which SARS is pursuing. We've also referred matters to CIDB because we found that there was misrepresentation to CIDB by the company with regard to the grading of the companies to enable it to get the contract from the department. The civil litigation outcomes. As I indicated earlier on, the SIU has instituted civil action by way of a claim of damages to the value of 140 million, which was amended later to 95 million, and the particulars of claim were amended following an exception that was raised. The summons in this matter has already been issued on the 6th of February 2018 in the name of SIU as the plaintiff, and these were issued in the High Court of South Africa, Gauteng Division. We've included the case number there, Honourable Chair and Members, 7760/18. Aspol Construction, Dan Lucas Kosana, who is the director of Aspol, Zandile Yvonne Mate, Nie Makatini, and Mpo Joseph Mufokeng, former CFO at Department of Water Affairs. This matter covers these officials as well. The status of civil litigation is that the three of the defendants, as mentioned, have pleaded, have all provided the pleadings. A notice has now been served for amended plea to be filed to accord with the amended particulars of claim. Chairperson, as the old adage would say, is that obviously there is that principle of being innocent until the court has made a finding against any of the officials. Status of one investigation continued on slide 31. We've made NPA referrals of evidence pointing towards fraud involving this company and Mr. Kosana, having made fraudulent misrepresentation in the tender document which referred. A referral was made on the 18th of September 2018. Our finding is that had it not been for this misrepresentation, the company would not have been given the grading that was given, and as a result, it would not have received the contract that it received. Disciplinary referral of evidence pointing towards possible misconduct. We've indicated that the DDG of the water trading entity on the 3rd of July 2018, we have been informed, Chairperson, that the said DDG was suspended on the 2nd of October 2018, and the disciplinary process commenced, and the DDG concerned was dismissed. However, and due to the process that was followed, there was a finding that the process was flawed. And we are informed that this flaw would be rectified. As a result of that flaw, the official consent has been reinstated. But we are of the view, Chairperson, that the findings still stand, and we are of the view that there is merit in the company, in the department, taking forward that matter. The misconduct consent consists of the following: gross negligence in the performance of duties, contravening various prescripts including the PFMA, Constitution, Treasury Regulations, and the Department's SCM policy and the CIDB Act. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, we have already made observations around the project management issues. I will not repeat them on this slide because they are the same as the ones that I indicated when I opened up. Moving on slide 23, SIU observations on the current state of service delivery in Kiani. Again, the observations are similar to as I opened, but we just want to single out this observation. The company which was responsible for the geotech services and managing the drilling of the boreholes indicated that the normal price for installing a borehole similar to the ones installed in Giani would be around 100,000. But our finding, Honorable Chair and members, is that in the Giani project, the price for a borehole, including the treatment plant, was between 1.2 million and 1.4 million per borehole. That is the finding that we have reached, and that's how inflated the prices were. The company supplying water treatment plant indicated that the price range for the treatment plant is between 195 and to 295. Water treatment plants, we have found that they worked only for a month and they needed, again, reparations. These are some of the observations. The full report includes detailed findings in this regard. The status of the Lebelle Northern Water, the investigation into the supply chain management have been completed, and we found that the contract was irregularly awarded. That was the basis on which we instituted civil litigation, and that's the papers that I was reading from earlier on. As I indicated, the value of this matter is 2.2 billion. We've also referred matters to the CIDB for further investigation. On the Lebelle Northern Water, we've also referred a matter for the disciplinary hearing in respect of the CEO of that agency. We've made NPA referral on the 3rd of April 2018 for the contraventions of PFMA. We've also made a disciplinary referral against one official, the manager of planning at the Lebelle Northern Water, on the 20th of September 2018 for collusion, fraud and forgery. NPA referral was made in respect of the official on the 20th September 2018, that's the criminal part, that the initial one was the disciplinary part, but all of those are a founding of a criminal process as well, which is fraud and forgery. The corruption investigation in this regard, the completion date of this corruption investigation has been extended. We have been in a position where we have uncovered new evidence of corrupt activities which must be investigated and be brought to their conclusion. We've also found that there is a vehicle that has been used, a vehicle in the generic sense, be it a company or a trust or whatever the case may be, which was used in this regard. So because of the scope issues, we may also require for the scope extension so that we cover that aspect. It is our view that if we continue to investigate this matter, we are likely to come up with further evidence in this regard. We are also undertaking a value for money exercise. In this regard, we use some of the experts that we have on board. Chair, we just really indicate on the slide that some of the challenges we have come across, but it's really astounding to have found that in this matter the CEO of the Lebelle Northern Water have in many instances waged what I could call in bracket a pushback against the investigation. But we have not relented. We have gone forward. There was an appointment of some audit firm which conducted some parallel investigation, but in our view, this was unwarranted, and we will bring this to the attention of the accounting authority of the department. It is also interesting to note that the Lebel and Northern Water has also applied for an interdict against the SIU to prevent the SIU from conducting further investigation. Chairperson, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, it's although we do observe that our country respects the rule of law, but in this instance, it is our view that it's really an abuse of state resources, and we will make appropriate recommendation. It is unheard of that a investigation authorized by a proclamation that we can now oppose court seeking interdict. It's really unheard of. But as I say, I premise this by saying we do respect the rule of law, and that anyone in the country who feels that his or her rights are being trampled upon, they've got the legal process to follow. But we are arguing, we have presented, and will argue against the interdict. The status of the investigation at the Gauteng Department of Human Settlement. The supply chain investigation is complete in this regard, and as a result, the SIU has found that the contract was awarded irregularly and that there was corruption involving the company and the officials. The SIU has instituted civil litigation on the 29th of March 2018 to set aside the contract to the value of 108 million. We've provided the committee with the case number. This is in the Gauteng High Court. We've also made NPA referrals in respect of the former DG to institute possible criminal proceedings for contravention of Section 38 of the PFMA. That was made on the 15th of November 2017, and the criminal proceedings are still ongoing. Referral of NPA in respect of Gauteng Department of Human Settlement officials for corruption on the 25th of April 2018. Our high-level observation with regard to the state of service delivery is that the project has since come to a standstill, and there are still areas not connected to the bulk services. The Gauteng human settlement status continue. Referral of NPA and asset forfeiture unit in respect of 7 officials and entities for corruption on 3 April 2018. We have referred evidence to SARS on 6 March 2018 relating to false tax clearance certificate of a company and the corruption relating to the above 7 officials and entities. We have referred 3 disciplinary referrals supporting charges of misconduct in respect of 3 officials on the 13th November 2017. The hearings, we are informed, are set to commence in a short time to come. We've also referred matters to the CIDB. The investigation has been concluded in this regard, and the final presidential report was submitted on the 20th of September 2018. With regards to Mshatuze, Chairperson, this is quite one of those oldish matters, and you'll see that on the slide, on the right-hand side, we tabulate some of the criminal cases that came out from this investigation. A criminal case of fraud and corruption was opened against an employee of Mshatuze Water Board and the service provider who paid the gratification. This is a corruption matter, and the case was reported at Richards Bay with the case number provided 164, and it was reported on the 2010 in November. There was also a criminal case of contravention of Section 40, 50, 1A, and Section 51, 1A, read with Section 86 of the Public Finance Management Act against the board members of the Mhlathuze Water Board. And again, the case was reported at Richards Bay with that case number 227, March of 2010. In this regard, we could not refer three disciplinary action against three employees, and the basis being that these employees had left the water board. The criminal matters are being dealt with and are handled by the DPCI, which is the HOPS, and we will continue to follow up on this matter. The last slide, number 40, really just indicates that the investigations are still ongoing, and we are collating all the information and the evidence that we've come across, again, of all the individual investigations, with a view to considering any remedial action against individuals where the prevention and combating of corrupt activities has been contravened, and where there could have been governance failures, and also the reporting requirements not being complied with. Once we have done that, we will do again the appropriate referrals. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, this brings us now to the new matter, the new proclamation that was issued recently. This is with regard to the investigation of Department of Water Affairs allocating contracts to SEP. The purchasing of SEP license for more than 500 million, which is alleged that it was not necessary, without correct tender process. There's allegation of about 35 million kickbacks. The proclamation was published on the 21st of September 2018, Proclamation 27 of 2018, and it was gazetted accordingly, 41915. Our team commenced work on the 21st of September 2018, and we have already uplifted computers and documentation necessary for investigation. We have also entered into what we call the letter of engagement with the department. The investigation is ongoing and is underway, but high level. We have to date found evidence thus far that indicates the following. The contract value is about 950 million, excluding VAT, consisting of 450 million for the licenses, plus maintenance over 5 years. We found that there was no need analysis conducted. There was no budget for the purchase of the SEP license, no environment or approval for the payments made to SEP. A total of 285 million was paid to SEP thus far, and CETA, as required by legislation, was not consulted, as is required for such purpose, and in fact CETA advised the Department of Water Affairs against proceeding with this contract. The SIU, our time frames, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, for the completion of this investigation, we anticipate that the civil litigation will be initiated in the first quarter of 2019, and the interim presidential report will be submitted by the 31st of March 2019. Chairperson, there's quite a number of systemic recommendations that we have made. They range from that all entities which are to conduct business with the department must be registered on a formal supplier database. This may really seem obvious, but it's something that we have found that it doesn't really happen, that some of the suppliers are not on the database, and must supply the department with a letter of good standing with SARS prior to conducting business with the department. The department should perform CPIC checks on all these entities to check for any employees' involvement and or conflict of interest prior to doing business. Suppliers supplying to be registered on the department database as well as entities already registered should be complete and prescribed form in which any potential conflict of interest and or relationship must be declared. Amendments to tender evaluation documents should be required to be signed off by all regional bid adjudication committee members or any other committee member that's appropriate. Committees dealing with the evaluation and awarding of tenders are to ensure that any such declarations are made formal, included in the tender evaluation or adjudication process. We've just recommended that a circular should be communicated regularly, possibly quarterly, alerting all staff to the provisions of Section 30, Subsection 1 of the PS Public Service Act, as well as 17 of the Prevention of Combating of Corrupt Activities Act. Authorization to perform remunerative work outside of the public service should be kept centrally and safe. A database or register used for the declaration of interest should be shared with the SCM divisions and be regularly updated and inspected. Entities in which officials have business interest must not be allowed to do business with any government department, as it may well constitute the contravention of the what we call PCOC. The department should take note of the prescribed thresholds determined by National Treasury and ensure that the provisions thereof are implemented and approved at the appropriate level. Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, these are really some of the systemic recommendations. We do engage with the departments or state institutions in terms of unpacking these systemic recommendations. This could, in all probabilities, assist with the risk management and some of the controls that the department can put in place so that we mitigate and avoid matters of this nature in future. That brings me to the end of the presentation, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, and the Minister. Thank you very much for affording us the opportunity.
All right. Thanks very much, Advocate TB, for the excellent presentation. Before we proceed, I just want to check. Can either proceed, Kaspedi Kiuseka Wija, or we can have a 3 minutes break so that comrades can attend to human rights issues. All right, can we take a 4 minutes break? Everybody is invited.
Financial implications, was there or is there going to be any attempt for recovery? So if you can just touch on that, please. Then that's right throughout your thing. Now, in terms of the current investigations, am I right in saying that you're finished with Vuwani and you're finished with Giani and you're finished with Lepele as well? If you are you able to provide us with the actual reports, not all the annexes, but maybe the executive summaries or whatever that we can have a look at running into our exercise? So that would be my second question. Because I think although your report is detailed to an extent, it would be, especially in terms of regular expenditure and regular contracts, that would be very useful to actually just get the background and the context to those. Obviously, I'm doing this through the chair with his permission. And then finally, on your ongoing investigations, I mean, anybody who's been watching Scopa knows that I'm particularly interested in IT matters, especially with our friends in the SAPS who are, you know, up to no good there. The ongoing investigation that you've got, is that SAP the company? Can you just... Is that the IT company SAP you're talking about? All right. Then I'd really like to know when that contract was concluded. And are you able to give us info and data on this at this stage whilst it's still ongoing investigation? That's either yes or no. Or must we go dig from our other sources? I I just want to know whether or not you can assist with that, because that's part of a narrative that we've been following in this in Scopa, is RT contract and particularly the involvement of CETA, and whether or not they've been able to. And I note there that you say CETA advised against it. So what level of info can you give us on the SAP contract for the 500 million and then you know, I understand you the rules relating to the proclamation, but if you can just give us some. Thank you, Chair. That's it.
Comrade Minister, can you help us? Because I suspect you have a larger staff contingent to ensure that place is cleared, so that we don't have fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Please, whilst continue, yes, Advocate.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. In terms of the resignation of staff, where does civil recovery that has to be done, we will follow on the civil recovery in the same vein as with the criminal process. So the resignation is one arm of following, of frustrating the employment relations process, but to the extent that they still are in the government entities or departments, we can still follow on, but we'll also follow on the civil recovery and criminal prosecution. Yes, we'll follow on that. The reports on Vuani we have submitted. Yani, we've submitted the interim report, and then on the overall investigation, we've also submitted the report. So the report on slide 9, if you have our pack, there's those various reports that we have submitted to the President. Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, the report, as a matter of practice, and I suppose law as well, once we've submitted it, is the President's report. But I'm aware that currently the President is releasing those reports to various state institutions. We can go back and just trigger the request, and then we can inform the Secretariat whether we'll submit the report or not. We can do that proactively, I suppose. What level, when was the SEP contract concluded? I'm informed that it was concluded on the 26th of July, 2016. What level of info can we give? As we indicated, that the investigation has really just started. With regard to further information that we dig up or come across, we'll probably provide it as regularly to the committee as we can. But at the moment, we're still at the early stages of the investigation.
All right.
There was just one question I forgot. Please make your indulgence. Yes, just one, Jane. You can see I'm being brief. You complained in the report about the 4 years it's taken to attend to a lot of disciplinary matters. What would be very useful if you could just provide us with a schedule of when a matter started, in other words, the date of the dispute, as it were, and where it is, how long it's taken for the NPA, for instance, still to make a decision, for a disciplinary matter still to be taken up. The committee would find it very useful to say, right, this matter started in 2012, and 6 years later they're still fiddling around with it. In our engagements with the department, to have actual specifics on the matters that you've listed in this report, so we can actually say, why has this taken 5 years? And demand response. But, being in the dark here doesn't help. So if you could help us with that, that'd be very useful. Thank you.
Right, thanks. Comrade Minister, thanks very much for your assistance. We'll return the favor next time. Yes, Comrade Kaka.
Thanks, Chair. I had only two questions. The first one, I think, parliament here dealt with it, the 4-year issue. The other issue is on the page. Where you're talking about insufficient, that is evidence. And you suggested that you'd be going back, or you're going back. Is it possible for you maybe to indicate some time frame as to what time frame are we talking about? That is in terms of you going back. Because if you look at most of the cases here, is that the matter is closed due to insufficient evidence. Now, the other issue would be obviously the question would be, is there cooperation from the department? Because obviously the department will have to assist you, that is in terms of your investigation. Yeah, I think those are the issues that I need clarity on. So far, I'm happy with the report. It's very progressive.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Chair and Members, on the matters that we have referred to, we actually have already written to the department in relation to those matters where they have been closed for reasons of insufficient evidence and so on. So we could at any time be receiving feedback from the department.
But maybe let me just amplify it quickly. I would imagine that when you refer a matter for disciplinary action, it's because you have evidence. So how then does the department not find evidence?
Chairperson, that's really the basis on which we are engaging with the department, because when we refer a matter for disciplinary process, we refer with the evidentiary pack. And similar to when we refer a matter to NPA for prosecution, when they say they do not prosecute, we would want to understand on what basis. If there was a gap, if there's any evidentiary matter that's missing, let us know. We might be having that evidentiary matter in our files. Let's engage to close that.
All right. Before I give Comrade Mendy, just to write on that. If that is the case, then how do you then have this thing from Gauteng that you gave them information in December last year, and in November 2018 you are saying disciplinary action will commence soon or shortly, and yet you gave them evidence information in December 2017? It's 12 months later.
No, thank you, Chair. as I indicated, as part of our new strategy, in the past, as SIU, there were no follow-ups to the state institutions with regards to the referrals. And we have observed that some of the referrals have been made, you know, dating back to like four years back. So the current strategy says we go back and find out. So in that case, the evidence would have been referred a year ago, and would like to understand from the state institution why is it that action was not taken. So that's the rationale for following up.
Thanks, Chair. This one is much better. Thank you, Chairperson. Well, just on page 35, clarity on the name of the officer that's involved, and is there any progress report from the NPA?
Should I start afresh? Okay, first one is on the official name, the official mentioned in page 35 of the report. Second one is on the progress report of the NPA on the cases that were referred in April. The other one, 3rd April, the other one I think is the 25th of April on page 37. And then lastly is the CEO of Lipele that pushed back. So I want to know two things on based on that. Was he issued the interdict? And if so, did you incur any cost trying to fight it back? And was it then withdrawn, or what's the current situation with the interdict? Thank you.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. With regard to the referrals to NPA, we haven't mentioned the names there because the people involved have not been charged yet. But we haven't really received any tangible feedback from the NPA. And this is part and parcel that have caused us to start engaging with the NPA. So hopefully on our next engagement, just this morning, we were at another committee presenting, and the NPA Acting Director of Public Prosecution was there. So we will be engaging with them probably in the next week or so. We've got a list of matters that we have referred, and we want to reconcile and ask them, where are you on these matters, including these three? So probably on the next occasion, they would have been charged, and we are able then be able to name the officials. With regard to the interdict, my colleagues who are dealing with the legal matters sitting behind me have informed me that the pleadings have closed in this matter. So the papers have been exchanged amongst the parties, so the matter is ready to go to court. So we are arguing against the interdict, and Lebelle, through CEO, is now wanting the interdict. So we are definitely incurring costs in that process. But we'll probably argue for cost order at the end of the process. Thank you, Chair.
All right, Comrade Kuno, Ross, and then Shulan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I wanted to make my own my conclusion, that, and I think it has something to do with the Act, that it does not say what do you do after this, because I would imagine a situation where we have a relay, you know, when we are running, you give it to somebody else and you give it to somebody else, and I think that's why, Chairperson, we can't get into the bottom of what we're trying to get. And I would suggest that in the next SIU report of any entity, any department, we need to have SIU, NPA, you know, that kind of a relay, so that we know exactly how far. Chairperson, skies as well. Mm-mm.
Very interesting. I'm happy to hear that coming from you. All right, continue. I'm all ears.
I would imagine a situation where after SIU, if it goes to NPA, when we have this report, then we have the report of both SIU, NPA, and how far has that happened with anyone. Because if we have it, if we have investigations piecemeal, we are not going to get into the bottom of investigations or how far you. That's why the frustration of you starting a case in 2010, but to date, it's still not finalized. I agree that it's not entirely your the prescripts of the law or what is needed from you, but also you need to have a buy-in from the president and all parties that are involved. But Chairperson, last meeting that we had, Advocate Mutibi said that it's difficult to pursue a case when an individual, or an employee has resigned or left the state. We have just passed Public Amendment Audit Bill, where it actually says that as part of the consequences, whether Ntabise Nkuno, after you have done wrong in Department of Water Affairs, we are going to follow you wherever you are, because I'm still alive, even though I'm in another department, which is what the employees of government have been doing. They leave this department, go to another department, because they know that you cannot do anything. But, you know, coming back to the Act says if any person is subpoenaed to attend any proceedings as a witness to produce any book, document, or object, fails without reasonable excuse to obey the subpoena, and it appears from the return of the person who served such subpoena or from evidence given under oath that the subpoena was served upon person to whom it is directed. Or the reason why I'm reading this, it actually gives you, because, I mean, last meeting you said you can't do anything if I've left that particular department. But this gives you power. Because you have already started with the process. It gives you power to actually conclude, because that's what the Auditor General told us last week when we had the SCOAC meeting. He said he'll be working with SIU, NPA, Public Protector and all the stakeholders that are involved. So I'm saying that I want you to talk to this and actually say what is preventing you to actually pursue to the end, because these people have used government's money. What is the problem? But the other thing, Chairperson, throughout the report, there is no time frame. And that's why it's important for us to have a meeting where all the stakeholders are here, so that we know that you are given this time frame. Because if you give this report without time frames, that's why we'll wait for 8 years, you know, for a particular case to be concluded. For instance, in your page 13, if you had time frame, and this thing has started in 2012, but to date, and that's what I was not getting from you, that when you talk about investigations, are you still talking about the 2012, when you said that it's finalized, are you talking about finalized as of now, November 20-something, or has it been finalized long time ago or what? So if next time you can give us dates so that we can find a way as, public representatives or as lawmakers to amend laws to make sure that we give you a chance to do what you are supposed to be doing without any problem. But again, the same law, Chairperson, it says that the SIU has the right to get all the documents. And I forgot the number of the page where you said that officials of the department did not want to give you the documents that you were supposed to be getting. But my question is that, what did you do to them? Because the law or the act gives you powers to get any document that will be investigating. What happened to those officials? Did you charge them as the breach of on the breach of law, or what did you do to them? And how much have you recovered for them? But for this round, Chairperson, on page 16, you were giving amounts in all the referrals to civil AFU recovery and all that. But when you spoke to 8 duplicate payments of the department, there's no amount there. So my question is that how much is it? I'll come back later, Chairperson. Thank you.
All right, Advocate.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. Well, I'll be of the same view that if we appear in the committee and some of our colleagues from particularly LPA, if they appear as well, that could be helpful. But obviously, as a process, I'd like to state the following. In terms of the SIU Act, when we investigate and we pick up or we find evidence pointing to the commission of a crime, the law requires us to refer that matter to NPA. Right? And the referral to NPA, our law goes further. The SIU Act goes further to say the matters that have been referred to NPA has to be dealt with in a manner that serves the interest of justice. And there is no time frame in that regard. But however, we are probably all agreed, honorable members and honorable chair, that these matters have to be expedited. These matters have to be dealt with as speedily as possible so that action can be taken as speedily as possible. There should be speedy consequence management. That we all agree to. But matters that have been referred, we obviously have said now to ourselves that it is in our interest to know how far that matter is, and that is why we are following up. So, as we follow up with the state institutions where we have referred matters to, even if it's disciplinary process, then the state institution concerned should probably be in a position to tell us how long is it going to take the steps. NPA should be able to do the same. But it's very difficult for us to say we have referred a matter for prosecution, this is how long it's going to take. We have referred a matter for disciplinary action, this is how long it's going to take. We may be misleading the committee if we sit here and give timelines, it's going to be thumbsuck. But if we have those indications from those other parties, then we can probably give indicative timelines, but which will be provided by the other parties. In terms of pursuing the resigned employees, I recall I said the employer who resigns, resignation terminates employer-employee relationship. And as a result, as an employer, you cannot take action against an employee who has resigned. That's the Labor Relations Act or the employment relations field. In terms of pursuing criminality, whether you have resigned or left or you have been retrenched, if there's criminal act related to Ms. or Mr. X who has resigned, there's nothing that impedes us in law to follow the person criminally. The same as civil recoveries. The point was made earlier on, I think, by the honorable member, in terms of recoveries. Where there is evidence pointing that the official who has resigned has caused loss to state institution, we are in a position where we can recover civilly, obviously within the rules of the civil litigation. We always take into account whether there's prescription or there's no prescription, but in many instances we find that prescription has been avoided, and we are able to follow up whether you've resigned or not resigned. So the only area which was an issue was around employer-employee relationship. But again, we have also since picked up that in the Public Service Act, there's that provision which says, if you are still within government, state entity, state-owned entity, or public service, then there's still that latitude that we can pursue you. Because at least you are still within, the employer is one, is government. So if we take that into account, we can still pursue you because you are still within the same employer. But if you resign and go out of the state, then the employer-employee relationship is terminated, but we can still pursue you criminally and civilly. Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. I'll come back to you, and then Comrade Chulane, Comrade Boy, then we'll check if there's any follow-up so that we can tie this one down. Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you very much for the presentation, Advocate Matibi and Mrs. House. I think we appreciate the detail, and it makes life much, much easier for us. But just with regards to the advance payment in Bhuvani, which I think is blatant fraud, if I can make that assumption, because I remember the Eskom situation where there was advance payments where somebody bought a mine to provide coal with, which is nothing else than constituting fraud and theft. Your recommendations was made then to the DG in terms of these advance payments, and you actually saved the state a lot of money. I think 8.5 million. The total amount was 29 million, but I just want to speak about the legal remedy that you've used in terms of a recommendation. And I think you've now highlighted that the ideal should actually be a recommendation to the National Prosecuting Authority for immediate sanction in terms of getting justice to be done. So the recommendations on paper sounds a bit weak, and I thought there could perhaps be other legal instruments that you can use. And why not perhaps a direct referral to the National Prosecuting Authority with the view to prosecute criminally in terms of these advance payments. And it speaks to the internal situation within Bhuvani, where it was actually people working for the department who had interest, if I believe correctly, in Eskom. But I also, there was one of the DDGs today made a presentation to the Water and Sanitation Committee on National Sanitation Program, and this is Mrs. Zandile Makatini. I think she is also implicated in terms of a civil litigation process. Now that, you know, that shows the weakness in terms of the action taken, that not to say that people are found guilty before they are guilty, but in terms of the process of law, if you can just explain to us that we can find some confidence in terms of the actual legal remedy that could stop or prevent then state employees doing business with the state. In the case of the water departments, it's close to R1 billion. In total, I mean, per year, it was R8 billion, state employees. And what the criteria should be, whether it should be just recommendations to the DG or what stronger actions you would advise in that regard. I would appreciate that. And then just with regards to the question, follow up on my colleague, the Honourable Bratasen, with regards to recovery and resignations. The new Audit Act, it's an interesting one, and I've spoken to the AG on that, where they will attach liabilities in the form of a letter of debt, which will be served on the accounting authority. Now, I don't know how that will impact where there's huge transgressions and people now resign. And then from the Auditor General, that will be a letter of attachment to the Accounting Authority. And obviously the Accounting Authority should then lay criminal charges to see that the legal process is followed. But just your views in terms of how this Act can perhaps assist you in terms of the process being expedited, I believe. And then the last one is just with regards to the latest one, SAP, and I think it started in 2016 and currently we're in 2018, and I can see you got out of the blocks very fast as compared to the historic situation where we were struggling to get implementation from 2008. But 285 million were paid in this regard, and this is mostly with regards to, I think, transgressions in the Public Finance Management Act. Also, the remedies that you've taken there, is there criminal intent? It's quite serious, the transgressions in terms of the Public Finance Management Act. Your procedure followed in this regard. I just browsed through it very quickly, and I don't find strong recommendations in terms of criminal activities and charging those peoples with the view to prevent, as you so adequately did in some of the instances. But thank you very much for your presentation.
Right, can we have a response? I was convinced that we will have an early evening, but I see comrades have issues. Comrades, you will have the whole evening tomorrow, because then you will be having serious issues. Yeah.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. In terms of the advance payment, it was our finding that that is unwarranted and it's irregular. We've pronounced that to the department, and our hope is that there would be appropriate steps that will be taken. Honourable Member, you've made an appropriate analogy in some of the matters in the ESCOM environment. We have found similar practice, but we have pronounced that this is irregular and this is contrary to the Public Finance Management Act and its regulations. With regard to the conflict of interest, this is something that is so pervasive, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Doing business with the state is something that is prohibited when you are employed by the state. But we find it in many instances. So it's probably, it's a culture issue, but I think it's also our monitoring systems. If we will be able to create the monitoring system, and that is why our recommendation is that prior to companies doing business with the state, there should be a proper check with the Companies Act, the company that registers companies, to check the directors and all of that, so that prior to doing business, we would have made those checks. And if you pick up that there's a government official doing business, then we must stop it there and then. But we expect, like everyone who is employed in government, particularly at certain levels or in certain areas, particularly supply chain, that there should be an appropriate declaration of interest. That is required by law and by policy, but we find in many instances, in many state institutions, that there's officials who do not declare the interest. But in this regard, we are of the view that then when that is found and recommendations are made to deal with these officials, there should be consequence management so that any punishment by law or the legal principle relating to punishment that it deters, it's got a deterrent effect for those who would be conflicters of the law. So we are of the view that if recommendations that are made are acted upon and there's consequence management, those that even had the intention of doing the same infraction, which is doing business with the state and not declaring, they should then be deterred and dealt with appropriately. On the SAP side, yes, the investigation has really just commenced. So Chairperson, at this stage, we do not have further information other than what we have really pointed out. We should be in a position to give further information on the next occasion we appear.
Thank you. Comrade Chulane, then Comrade Boy, then the repeaters. All right.
Chairperson, it's just some clarity questions. The others have been covered by other comrades who have spoken before me. Is there clarity on advocate on page 20 on the employee-owned business entities? I see here on item number 1 and number 3, there's no name of an employee. And when you go to page 24 as well, item number 5 and number 7, there's also no name for an employee. But the other issue that I wanted to raise in this regard with this slide, advocate, is on the amount. If perhaps maybe you do have the amounts that are implicating the so-called issues. And the second matter is on the matters that were closed due to insufficient evidence. When you check at page slide 20, the evidence on the 24th of May 2018 and the other one 24th of May 2018, they were closed due to. And as well at the other slide number 24. I just wanted to get clarity on, in terms of this matter being closed, if there are closed, like you're not going to pursue any investigations regarding these two matters the four matters that we're talking about. But the others, I think I'll have to ask the department in terms of the, you know, I'm just struggling to understand how really do you suffer to get a information to a point. I'm not sure whether is it you as a SIU who decide to close the matter or is the department. Then if you're nodding the department, maybe we will ask them probably maybe tomorrow, but maybe if I can just get the amount, if there's any response and the name, because they're not here. Thank you.
Right, and Comrade Chulane, maybe you could keep in mind the fact that the referral was done in 2013, but the decision to discontinue disciplinary action was done in May 2018. That is 5 years later. That is what the department should talk to.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. That's exactly the point around all these matters that have been closed. It's when we found out status of disciplinary action as advised by the department on the 17th October 2018. That comment is when we were advised by the department. We were expecting the department to take action, but they indicated that the matters were closed due to insufficient evidence. That's where we are expecting engagement to say what was the missing evidence so that we can assist if possible. And the names were not included simply because the matters have not been concluded, finalized. In terms of the amounts, Honorable Chair and Members, we probably could resend the slide with the breakdown. What we have done, if you look on slide 22, we've given an overall amount of 8.9 million paid to officials by the department. But what the honourable members are asking is that are we able to break it down per official? We will do that, and then we can send only that portion back to the secretary.
Thanks, Comrade Boy.
I'm short. Good evening, sir. My first question is, when is the directive of the minister correct? When do you find it wrong? Because sometimes we hear that ministers give instructions to the department, and the ballooning of the money in the project comes from a directive of the minister. So at which stage is it a criminal act when the minister gives that directive? When does it get investigated? Because I can see you don't say anything about it. So I can also be a minister so that I can give directives endlessly. And things will be quite fine in what I'm doing. When is the directive wrong? The second part, I can see you continuously saying service delivery has not happened. The pipelines have not arrived. How does that relate to criminality? To criminalize, and who remains the criminal within that act? So that I have a sense that if the Honorable Chair keeps on running over the pipes there, you should arrest him. Or what is it that goes wrong or right within that particular environment? My third and last question is, you said the multi-lawyers that gets instructed to deal with these cases or to assist those that think that they should stall your work. When does that become a criminal act? Because, you see, I also got fears of the Bill of Rights and what is mainly human rights. And then you find that this person says, no, it's all my right, and then you continue with the case. How do you deal with that type of environment? What can you do to be able to break through so that you still maintain the rule of law with the human rights, but to continue pursuing a particular person? Give us a sense that when does it become a criminal act, when I'm trying to practice my rights throughout that process.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. when does the minister's directive become correct and not correct, and when does it become a crime? Chairperson, when I listened to the comments around the amendment to the Public Auditors Act, and in fact, Honorable Ross asked for a view, around how is it that this act amendment is going to assist. Maybe just to go back to that comment. Our understanding is that when the Auditor General makes a finding around irregular expenditure or wasteful expenditure or any of the other processes governed by the PFMA, he should be able to then, once certain processes have been followed, to either issue a certificate of debt, or where there's a need for further investigation, he would then refer a matter to SIU or to the public protector and so on. So it is our view, and when the comments were made, was that in some instances, the accounting authority or accounting officers would say, no, we have had a directive or a direction or an instruction. So our view, and my view in particular, is that, and in fact the law is very clear on this, that if a directive or a direction is given, and I as the accounting officer or the accounting authority am of the view and know that this is an irregular instruction or an unlawful instruction, I should be able to know that I cannot carry out that kind of an instruction. And obviously then either engage with the executive authority and say, this is not an instruction that I can carry out.
I think maybe it's a question to localize it in the context of your that we're talking to now. Have you come across similarities that that you might have come across. Is there an instance where these are as a result of either directives that have been given or an improper implementation of directives? I think just to give it context so that we don't discuss it purely as
a... No, that's right. No, thank you, Honourable Chair. If you then bring it back to our investigation, part of our investigation looks at the authority levels. If we find that, like as in Lepelle, Northern Water, or Department of Gauteng Human Settlement, where we're saying a contract has been awarded to a contractor irregularly, that irregularly is a pronouncement that the process has not followed the procedure or the prescribed procedure. So the procedure would say, and we look at the SCM process and what the process is defined to say, what should it have been, what should it have followed. If we find that it should have been, you know, out on tender and it wasn't, we make a finding. It wasn't appropriately approved by a certain committee in the SCM process, we make a finding. If it was supposed to have been signed off by the Director General and it wasn't, we make a finding. But also we look at the prescripts of PFMA, which says the accounting officer is responsible for the following acts. And the act is very clear that the accounting authority has to make sure that the department maintains appropriate procurement process and so on. The department has to put together the risk management process. There is a provision, yes, indeed, of the responsibilities of the executive authority. But in our investigation currently, we have not come across any instruction or a directive by the executive authority of the department, which is illegal or unlawful. Should there be any evidence that points to that, we will then look at it and make an appropriate finding, Honourable Chair and members. In terms of service delivery, when does it become a criminal? We pronounce ourselves that due to the findings that we have made, if a contractor does not have an appropriate competence, and they have been given the work, like as in Vuani, where this Askul company was given the work. We have looked at the failure to deliver the service. And the failure to deliver the service is because the company does not have the competence. And the competence results from the fact that they have misrepresented their competence or their level to the CIDB. They have misrepresented their grading, and possibly with collusion with some of the people in the CIDB, and hence the referral to CIDB for them to investigate further. So that misrepresentation is a criminal act, and we have referred that fraud to be investigated. In the similar vein, where we find that there has been misconduct, and the PFMA again makes it an offence to contravene, I think, Section 38 or so by the accounting officer or accounting authority, where we find that there has been that kind of a contravention which led ultimately to these irregularities that led to failure of service delivery, we then also make a recommendation for criminal charges. The multi-lawyers dealing, we have found that very problematic, Honourable Member, and we are of the view that those challenges, whilst they are done within the rule of law, that anybody can take matters within the law, but we are of the view that those challenges that we have referred to are unwarranted, our investigations are authorised, and that there is no basis in law, in our view, in law to attack those investigations. And as we indicated, we will make appropriate recommendations, whether based on either irregularities or abuse of state resources. Thank you, Chairperson.
All right. The two follow-ups, and then we close that on Comrade Kuno and your comrade.
Chairperson, to remind the advocate that I also asked for the amount on the 8 duplicate payments. I hope that when you give that report, you'll also include that. But Chairperson, it has been, we've been referring to this now time and again as COPPA Fifth Parliament, that we need to make an example of employees who are moving from one department to the other, and as they're doing that, there's been wrongdoings. Do you have an example on that? Because I think as a committee, we'll be happy to actually say that company X or this Mr. X or Ms. X left and they did this here, but we've still investigated and this is what we are recovering from this person as that person is in another department. Do you have any example on that? Because I think it will be something that when we sleep at night, we can actually say, as a government, we're going somewhere. But also, Chairperson, on page 29, on the investigations or investigation status on SARS, you know that a lot of companies, Public Works has done that before, where you find that this particular company has been blacklisted and they go and change their names to something else. So I'm saying that report that you are writing trying to get more information from SARS, if you could check that this ASCUL, they don't trade in another name, because I would assume that the tax number will be the same. I mean, Chairperson, Baba would use the 35 million rands. And I would just want to check from you if, because obviously you have a report on that. What have you done to those who got the kickbacks that 35 million?
Yes, comrade.
Chair, thanks. Just a quick question to Advocate TV. On page 31, I apologise, Chair, I forgot to mention this one when we started. We're well aware of the involvement of the DDG, the former DDG in the Vuwani matter, and she, according to this, was subjected to a disciplinary and was dismissed, but then she returned because of an irregular process. Can you give us some detail on that irregular process and who was involved? Because that would also be very useful for us in our engagement going forward. Do you have detail on what went wrong there? Because if somebody messed it up, then they must answer. Thanks.
No, thank you, Chairperson. We take into account what the Honourable Member, Honourable Kuno, has said. We will find out around the change in names, but as you correctly indicated, it's something that happens regularly, but we'll follow up and see if it hasn't mutated into another name as we do checks with the SARS. The 35 million kickback, it's still an allegation that we are investigating. But we will make sure that once we determine and evidence come up in terms of that, we have to make sure that we take appropriate action. Honourable Member, in terms of the disciplinary process, SIU made referral to the department for the disciplinary process to be taken. We have been informed that the process was flawed, or there was a technicality around the process. So we are really still to engage the department in terms of the nature, what is it that exactly happened. So as the department, they could probably provide information on that. Thank you.
Right. Okay. No, that's fine. I think when we deal with the department, some of these matters, we can deal with them at that point. And I think, Comrade Minister, the issue of Lebelle and Northern Water and the challenge to the investigation using public money, I think I would imagine that at some point during this process, maybe if you could give us feedback in terms of what have you found, who has authorized that, if it was authorized in a meeting, where are the minutes, who were the people who were there, and to really check if those people are fit to remain in the leadership of that institution. If there is a process to prove or disapprove allegations of impropriety, you don't take advantage of that to confirm that you were clean, but you want to obstruct the process, then there's something very abnormal about the logic of those people. So I think if we can look into that, hopefully sometimes next week, I think that's when we deal with internal control and leadership issues. I think we may want to remember this part. Right, Advocate and your team, we thank you very much. We're not saying leave, we're saying thank you very much for your presentation, but we're not stopping you from leaving in case. I was just saying it's not automatic. That by saying thank you, you say. All right, let's allow National Treasury to. So National Treasury, because they, like the SIU, are external to the department. They look into these things. They look at the numbers. What do they see, and how will this assist us as we move into engagement with the department as from tomorrow? Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. I'm going to try and be brief. I'm acutely aware that I'm standing between people and the end of the day. So this presentation is largely around the budget and some budgeting issues. I'll speak about some budget trends around the audited outcomes for the last two financial years, and then I'll just talk about some shifts in the budget. I'm not going to talk about compensation of employees, but I'll touch on it. And then just some issues that impact on the budget and where we see the budget go to. And then looking at some spending performance numbers for this financial year. And then within the water trading entity, really just around its cash position and some of the stuff that impacts on its cash position. So for the department, and my apologies, it does look quite small, so what we see for 17-18 is that the department underspent on its vote by about 500 million rand. Despite the underspending on the vote, there was overspending on the main division of the vote. And that main division, overspending on the main division of the vote, as per definition in the PFMA, is still unauthorized expenditure.
Can you repeat that
okay.
part?
So
that makes sense.
So the definition for unauthorized expenditure in the PFMA is overspending on the vote or overspending on the main division of the vote. So even if there was underspending on the vote, if there was overspending within a program, it is still unauthorized expenditure. And that is just in the way that budget, that Parliament votes on the budget, that causes that. The unauthorized expenditure in 2017-18 is in Program 1, largely related to a project that the department calls War on Leaks.
Which is
Program 1,
Administration.
Now, what's quite important about the administration program is that the administration program is usually defined for all departments in the same way. And this is really the program that runs the department. So it's the program where facilities management happens, where HR is and all of that. And when a service delivery program sits within the administration program, it tells us that the program doesn't have a home. So we have this overspending on a project or a program that doesn't have a natural home within administration. What's quite interesting on this, and I'll touch on it a little later, is that the underspending on the vote is largely as a result of underspending on two conditional grants, the regional bulk infrastructure grant, which has two components. There's a direct component and an indirect component. The direct component sits within the department's payments for capital assets budget as buildings and other fixed structures. And the indirect component is the transfers that they make to municipalities. So the reason why I block out the water and sanitation services in 17-18 is that the department, we had a budget structure change. But in the 16-17 year, it was that specific program, water and sanitation services, that also had unauthorized expenditure. But this was for a different project. So this was the bucket eradication program that resulted in the underspending. And there's a whole history to the bucket eradication program and where it started and how it came about. And then how we tried to remedy some of the issues that the department has around the design of this project. What's quite interesting about 16-17 is that even though there was an overspending on the main division of the vote, there was also overspending on the vote itself. So, and this is basically due to when the department's overspending is a lot bigger than the underspending in other programs. So, and this is also in two components. The buildings and other fixed structures, because this was an indirect program that assists where the department implements projects and programs on behalf of municipalities, and that's the indirect RB grant or the indirect water services infrastructure grant. What's also quite interesting about what happened in 16-17, and then I'll touch on some of it on the next slide, is this is one department, one of very few departments in government who still has vacant funded posts. So compensation of employees in the department is a serious trend of underspending in that. What happened in 16-17 is an underspending of about 100 million rand at the end of the financial year. But what we also did in 16-17 is you'll see a variant of 15 million rand that was done after the adjustments budget. Before the adjustments budget, I'll touch on it in the next slide, is a 65 million rand variant away from compensation of employees, and a 62 million rand declared underspending. So what we've done in the adjusted appropriation bill is we reduced the department's allocation by 62 million. 62 million because they weren't going to spend it. So as a result of these shifts that we've made, I mean, the underspending on the department's compensation of employees budget is underestimated, if you want to think of it that way, from what we had thought at the beginning of the financial year. So when we think about where the big variants go to in the department, so compensation of employees in 16-17 and 17-18 was a large shift. In 18-19, we did not agree with the department to shift any further funds from compensation of employees. Given instability within the department, it was important for us to think about what are the long-term remedies and how do we help this department on some long-term sustainable path, and one of the ways to do that is to just fill the vacant posts with good people so that you're able to have the decisions that needs to be made, the work that needs to be done, that takes the department down that sustainable path. Despite all of that, what we do see is a massive shift in goods and services budget. So this is the department's operating budget. This is the stuff that would pay for computers, it pays the water and lights, it buys the printers and all of that. What's quite interesting about the shifts in the 2018-19 adjustments budget that the Minister of Finance tabled last month was that the goods and services shifts comes largely out of two programs. So this is the program that relates to program or information and planning, program planning, water planning and information management. And the water sector regulation program. Now, what we also published in the budget or in the adjustments budget last month was performance related to these two programs. And there's some very important projects that happens in these two programs. In the water sector regulation program is the program that funds the WARN leaks, not the WARN leaks, sorry, the blue drop and the green drop report. So this is an assessment of municipal water and wastewater infrastructure, and the water planning and monitoring does all the planning for the infrastructure projects and water resource management in the department. So when you move large chunks of the department's budget away from those things, then it compromises specific targets that the department would like to meet around all of that. The shift in the department's budget goes to these two programs, the bucket eradication program and the WARN leaks program. in relation to some of the cash management issues within the department, in the annual report we publish the accruals and the payables. Now, the accruals are when services are rendered to the department but they haven't received an invoice, and the payables is when services are rendered to the department and they have received an invoice. So what we see is that the department's total payables at the end of last financial year was about 1.5 billion rand. Of that, about half of it was for invoices within 30 days and half of it was for invoices over 30 days. And what's quite interesting about this is when a department underspends on the regional bulk infrastructure grant by about 500 million rand, is that the amount? 590 million rand, and they don't ask for a rollover, what they're basically asking is that this, what they're basically saying is that at least those payables within 30 days will be funded out of the following year's budget, which isn't extraordinary, but one of the rollover rules in terms of Treasury Regulations 6.2 is that you can roll over funds for committed projects to finish capital projects that are committed. Yet we didn't get a request to roll over the funds that would have helped the department's financial position in relation to these accruals and payables that they need to pay. In relation to irregular expenditure, irregular expenditures increased in the department. This is largely around two or three big projects that shifts irregular expenditure. But what causes irregular expenditure to grow in a department is one, when it's not condoned, and two, when it is not regularized. So if you have a project that is found to have been irregular and the expenditure against that project is irregular, if you don't do anything about it in the following year, any cent that you spend on that project is also still irregular. And that is what causes this growth in irregular expenditure in the department. In relation to 2018-19, so this is the pre-adjustment budget spending performance for the second quarter of this year. The department has spent or is underspending against its own plan by about 800 million rand. Despite that, the department is also showing an overspending in the administration program, so this is program one again, because of war leave. Again, a program that shouldn't be in the administration program. As I said earlier on, administration pays for the ministry, it runs the department, it pays for the rent and all of those things. It's not a service delivery program, and when you see expenditure like that in a service delivery program, there's a problem here about where this program should reside, how should it be budgeted and funded for, and how do you measure the performance against that. In relation to the water trading entity, so this is the cash flow statement at the end of last financial year. It shows a significant improvement in the cash balances within the water trading entity. Honorable members will recall the last time I was here was in May, I think, May or March, and explained what we did with the water trading entity. So maybe I should move on to a few slides and then come back. So on the second last slide, what I show is there was a rapid deterioration in the cash balances in the primary banking account of the water trading entity. So when we noticed this in September 2016, we wrote to the department and said...
Just.
So it's the second last, slide number 14. Yeah. So it's the graph on the slide number 14. I'll come back to the other slide.
We're not in a hurry.
Okay. So what's happened is... In 2016, September 2016, so if you look at those, in between those lines, those quadrants that we have, so it's the second last one from the right, what we had seen was a rapid deterioration in the cash balances within the water trading entity. And we wrote to the department saying, we're seeing this, you have to take remedial action. Now what's quite important around all of this is that the Treasury regulations prohibits trading entities from running overdrafts or bridging or doing bridging finance. What the Treasury regulations also doesn't do is it doesn't give the National Treasury the authority to condone this. So, you know, if we had to be a strict Treasury, then what we'd be saying to the department is stop all transfers to the water trading entity for other projects and pay it back so that you can reduce these balances. But that's not what we did. So these cash balances deteriorated in December. We wrote back to the department saying, take remedial action. In March, we wrote to the department saying we see a further deterioration in the cash balances in the water trading entity. If you're not able to take remedial action, we will stop all payments that will be processed by the water trading entity. And we stopped all payments for, I think, 12 days. We didn't process any payments except payments to SARS, medical aid, so it's for the employees' taxes, medical aid benefits, and to ESCOM for the electricity to pump the water. We stopped everything. And we said to the department, give us a plan on how you're going to fix this. And once we agree that, or once you give us that plan, then we would allow you to process that. So the department came to us and said, what we can do is we can reduce the overdraft by 750 odd million rand in the first year, and the balance of that in the second year. What has happened was the department managed to achieve that target on that amount in the first year, but in the second year they wrote back to us and said, we're not able to achieve the target for this year. So the balance was a 1.4 billion rand. And then we said to them, okay, we will wait until your financial position and your audited financial statements are released, and we will review this. We reviewed it, so the department, so we do have a new arrangement with the department on reducing the balance on the overdraft. The balances on the overdraft at the end of the first quarter of this year was negative 431 million. At the end of the second quarter was 1.1 billion. But these balances are volatile depending on what large payments the department makes to the TCTA and how much revenue they're able to get back. If I go back to slide number 11, which is the cash flow statement with the audited outcomes in there. What's quite interesting about the cash flow statement is that the department is receiving revenue from the sale of water, and it is higher than what the department originally budgeted for. So at the beginning of the financial year, the sale of water was budgeted for, I think, at 7.9 billion rand, and the department collected 9 billion rand in revenue. And this is actual cash, so I'm not talking about the department recognizing revenue that may or may not come. It's actual cash numbers. What we also see on the cash flow statement in the repayments of other financial liabilities, and this is the payments that the department makes to the water trading entity, not the water trading entity, the TCTA, for the financing of these projects. And that's the main vehicle that they use to finance big water resource projects. And as you can see, at the cash and cash equivalents at the end of the financial year was that improvement in the cash balances within the water trading entity. So in relation to the liabilities, one of the largest liabilities of the water trading entity is to the TCTA. What the 2017-18 annual report shows is that there's a current obligation of 3 billion rand. So this is 3 billion rand that the water trading entity should have paid the TCTA but didn't. And maybe that is one of the reasons why they were able to come into some of the cash targets that we had set in relation to the PMG, the cash balances within the PMG account. But there are still all these long-term liabilities that the TCTA finances on water resource projects. So over a long-term period, the water trading entity will have to pay TCTA about 29 billion rand. It's a lot of money. Of that, some of it's guaranteed debt. So if the water trading entity doesn't pay the TCTA, it places significant risks on the balance sheet of the TCTA and its ability to finance water resource projects. If the WTE doesn't pay the TCTA, the TCTA is not able to meet its own cash obligations and debt obligations in the financing of these major water resource projects. In relation to...
What is that amount? Is it 29
million? So the full amount at March 2018 was 29 billion rand. But that's a long term. So that's
B
billion. And that would be paid off over a 20 to 25 year period, depending on the nature of those bonds, what can be rolled over. I mean, I think in August, the TCTA had a bond redemption of about 8.5 billion rand that needed to be paid. So that's on the one side of the balance sheet of the WTE. On the other side of the balance sheet, and I'm told that the committee was briefed on this last week, is what is owed to the water trading entity. And it's a lot of money. from a whole range of institutions. And there are some risks around this, so because on the one hand, if the TC, if the WT is not able to collect the revenue, it's also not able to finance the obligations or the TCTA's obligations. And then the last slide that I'd already spoken about was really showing that the rapid deterioration that we have seen in the cash balances of the WTE and the gradual improvement as per the commitment that the WTE has made to the National Treasury on reducing that between over the next 2 years. And that's where I end, Chair. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. I suppose, comrades, this assist in contextualizing some of these matters. So war on leaks is a continuous program, but it is not properly planned and therefore budgeted for. The expenditure is taken from administration. Well, I hope comrades are noting that. The department will be able to explain to us how did that come about. Compensation of employees. I'm sure comrades will recall, I think it was Correctional Service also had that problem or that issue where compensation of employees was always underspent and the money would be fired to other things. I think it's if we're in a planning meeting of scope, I'll say it's a very sly strategy where you complain that you don't have capacity, but you don't employ people, but then you take money that is supposed to be for compensation of employees to do other things. So it might be important to check those other things that you're doing with money that's supposed to be for compensation. What are these things for? What motivates them? How are they run? Who and what are they supposed to benefit? I find that very interesting for us to check. And the violence. It's war on leaks as well as target eradication. Now, what does this mean? And I'm sure maybe comrades who are dealing with projects will deal with that. Is it that the bucket eradication does not have a budget? Or is it that they merely overspend on that budget? Is it properly managed to say indeed the annual budget that has been set has actually been overspent? That's why we need to go and draw money elsewhere. Buckets were supposed to be eradicated during the time of President Mbeki. After him, another deadline was set under President Zuma. But this bucket eradication keeps on sucking money away from what they have been budgeted for. So we pass a budget here, and after we've passed it, the officials go and say, all right, let's change it. I think for me, that is one area that we may need to look at. I think those are the things that I have picked up, and my take is National Treasurer was providing information that in some areas assist us to give context to some of the things that we'll be talking to in the few days to come. Right? Any question, comrades? Yes.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, to my friend right next to me, the debtor's book is interesting, which is on your page up here. It's a debtor's age analysis. I see district municipalities is at 1.3 billion, local municipalities at 2.9 billion, and water board at 3.7 billion, and altogether it makes up 12 billion. Can you comment on any write-offs or applications for write-offs from the department? And if you can't give us proper comment now, maybe give us some information on that and on what basis those write-offs that have happened. And sorry, Chief, just a qualifying question. Have the department just written off on their own, or have they done it with your approval?
All right. Can get a response. Don't whisper to him, just answer to the house.
So Section 38 of the PFMA places the obligation to manage liabilities on the department itself. So the National Treasury doesn't have. So if there is any write-off, it will be by the department. So we don't have any authority to approve that or not. I can't remember. I think there were some write-offs, but you know that's all disclosed in the annual reports. So the age analysis that I show here is what is owed to them that they haven't written off. And I'll have to go back to the annual report and have a look at it again to give a clear answer on what that is.
All right. I hope the comrade can know this is work related. I don't understand why. You make people think that it's a private conversation. Yes, I agree with you. If it was a private company, it would have been liquidated. I agree. Yeah, I was saying on that question, can the department and the private and the water entity just work on that question about write-offs? Because I'm sure it will rear its head at some point during our interaction, so we can go and homework on it. Yes, Ross?
Chairperson, it would be interesting for me to just be clarified with regards to the major violence, ma'am. The bucket eradication is 72 million and then another 134 million, mostly from the compensation of the employees. But where will we find the structure? Is it in the unauthorized expenditure or in the regular expenditure? Unauthorized meaning that you don't comply with your budgetary requirements. And the unauthorized, if you look at the annual statements, is 526 million, or is it 526,000? Does it speak to your total of 463? I just want to know, if you have this environment and there's unauthorized and or irregular, how does it relate to the environments? And then just with the irregular expenditure, I think we need the annual reports actually, because the Chihani irregular is about 800 million and then bucket eradication also 620 million. And I'd just like to know how it speaks to the environments perhaps in terms of the budgeting process.
So let me clarify. The violence that I show in the table is the violence that was done before the adjustments budget. So in relation to, say, 16-17, where there was a 72 million rand violence, where you would see that is included in the adjusted appropriation money for the water and sanitation services program. So included in this, on slide 5, in the 738 million rand is the 72 million rand. So despite moving 72 million rand in the adjustments budget, adding another 40 million rand after the adjustments budget, spending on this program was 1.1 billion against an appropriation of about 778 million. So the violence would still, so any violence would add money to the program that might reduce the unauthorized expenditure. In relation to irregular expenditure, that doesn't pop up quite clearly in the budgeting information. And that is why we have to wait until the end of the financial year once the Auditor General goes in to look at that. So, for example, any of the irregular expenditure, so say that is the related to the Giani project. And in the same table on slide 5, in buildings and other fixed structures, what we see is an overspend of about 203 million. That's largely for Bhakti allocation. But what you'd also see in there would be the indirect allocations for the regional bulk infrastructure grant. And any spending against the, so what this table would normally show is just the spending against the regional bulk infrastructure grant. Whether that spending is irregular, that would show up elsewhere, and we have to wait for the audited financial statements to see that. Where it's quite clear to see irregular expenditure, and I can't remember if this was actually picked up by the Auditor General, is in 2016, in the 2016 Appropriation Act, for the first time what we had done is we had said compensation of employees across all votes is specifically and exclusively earmarked. And what that means is, so if we go to slide 4, is that any adjustments that the department may have made to reduce compensation of employees would then be in contravention of the Appropriation Act, because you're spending money on something that it was not appropriated for. So a reduction in COE post the adjustments budget, because that requires an Act of Parliament, would then also be deemed to be irregular expenditure in terms of the Appropriation Act. So those kind of things you'll see up quite easily when it's a contravention of the Appropriation Act. One of the things you'll see in the annual report for, I think it is for 16-17 for the department, is the department increased the transfer to an institution without Treasury approval. So that would then constitute unauthorized expenditure. So it's always difficult to see that, but it depends on how the budget is structured to pick up when transfers were made irregularly, or when allocations were reduced and spent on something else that was specifically exclusively earmarked.
All right. Any other follow-ups, comrades? Yes?
Part. The last part and the examples that you were giving. As I was reading this big report, I think there's unbudgeted deliverables that I think it costed up to 2.3 billion that are in the which is part of the problem. But I don't hear you emphasizing that. In your outline, you are talking to different topics, but where do you put that?
One of the things I needed to do was provide lower level information on the regional bulk infrastructure grant or on the water services infrastructure grant. So, I mean, if you go back to the slide, slide 5, maybe slide 5 might be a better thing to show this. Where you do have unbudgeted deliverables is really when there's a misalignment between what is in the budget and what is in the annual performance plan and what is actually happening on the ground. So when a project moves faster than you expect or slower than you expect and you move money around, then you create those deliverables. So one way of picking up on those is where you see money shifted quite late. So what's important about the post-adjustments shifts that you see in a department's budget is these always happen towards the end of the financial year, where the department has spent money on things that they didn't necessarily plan on spending money on. So those always show up in the post-adjustment shifts. And usually happens where they require Treasury approval, almost always in the last month of the financial year.
All right. I'll resist the temptation to ask further because it is a subject of our discussion tomorrow. I hope, I don't know if it is possible for you to, during the course of tomorrow, to draw information for us, say in the last two three years, look at those kind of projects, but most importantly, focusing on the shift of money. So much money was shifted from this program this project from this program to this project, so that we can put resin sense to those processes and to be able to see where money was shifted from to address these programs, and we can ask the appropriate questions for the department to give us context. If we can do that, that can assist.
The last MTF period, which is 3 years, that will make more sense, because that's why we have to confine ourselves.
Right. Any other question? You are ready for tomorrow? Okay. All right. No, thanks very much to National Treasury, as always. Comrade Minister, I do want to give you a minute or two. If there are issues you would want to broadly talk to, I know the presentation was by the SIU, but it was about the department still. It was one segment. I'm sure Toby will kindly finish you with the program. So you can see the various segments, but just for today, if there's anything that you may want to talk to, we'll give you the platform.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I have listened very, very attentively to both presentations, and I just confirm that there are all sorts of challenges that we're faced with. I think tomorrow will be appropriate for us to make a contribution in terms of both.